Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Code and Beyond, a podcast where we talk about software development and anything beyond that. My name is Pablo, and as usual, I'm here with my good friend Alex. Today, we have our first returning guest, Ana Hernández. Last time, we talked about SEO with her, and this time, she has come back to discuss a very different topic, product discovery. Hello, Ana.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
Hello.
Really nice to have you back. So, yeah, first of all, please introduce yourself again.
So, if anyone has listened to the other episode, they more or less know my story. They might also be a bit surprised to see me talking about a completely different topic. But I've been an SEO for a lot of my professional life, but about a year ago, I was offered the job of product manager in my company. So for a year or so, I've been a product manager, and I thought it would be interesting to talk a bit about product discovery, how we found out new ideas and all of that. So yeah, you'll see me with my product hat this time talking to you.
Yeah, I think product discovery is something that we don't see a lot as a software developers. At least I don't see it a lot because I'm just dealing with the code or more technical stuff. So yeah, sounds nice.
Yeah, and the software team, the development team, is a big part of it as well. So it's nice to talk about it from all points of view.
When we talk about product discovery, I guess it's the phase where you try to find new features and new things that you can add to your product, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it can be anything from just building a product from scratch to obviously, in my case, more or less, is adding new features to a product you already have that it's successful. And it's the process of not only figuring out what to build next, but also validating that the idea can be actually done and it makes sense to do it. Also, figuring out how you're going to do it, prioritizing it within the workflow of the team, and then even figuring out in the end whether it's been successful or not, if you want to do more on it, iterate over it, or if you're ready to let it go.
How do you start the process? Like, where the ideas come from?
That's a good question. So, I mean, all of you know a bit about this, and I'm sure you've both been involved in this kind of processes. But first of all, there's obviously different types of features that you build. There's basic features in a product that you're more or less sure that every user or customer will need. So those are a no-brainer. To launch a product, you need the most basic things. But then there are all the other features when a product is already successful that you want to add to it, things that either will satisfy customers because there are things that you're offering them that maybe they didn't know they wanted, but they're delighted to have them, or even things that they actually need to be able to use it even further. So there is a lot of places where ideas come from. One great place is the product team. So the developers and the designers, they know the product in and out. A lot of them know the users as well and our customers, so they're able to think about ways we can improve the product. But there's also obviously stakeholders. As you know, sometimes ideas come from the top, and they're also good ones. There's ideas that come from users, either user feedback, user surveys, user interviews, which is things that as product managers together with our UX designers do a lot of throughout the year. Some great ideas come from there, and some others come obviously from competitors as well. A good product manager and product team should know not only their customers but also obviously their competitors and the market, so know what's coming in the future, in the near future. And there's also ideas that come from metrics, so when you're looking at your Google Analytics, your Google Search Console, if you're in the SEO realm, you just think about what's most successful in your product or what isn't, and why is that, if there's things that could be improving there. So there's like a bunch of different places where ideas come from. The interesting thing is learning which one to build. That's the hard part.
It depends a lot if your product is B2B or B2C, right? Because you're talking about user research or user surveys, things like that. All of that, it's mainly B2C. You cannot get that information from, well, you could get that information from B2B, like talking to your partners, things like that. But I guess change a lot depending on the type of the product, right?
Yeah, my product is mainly B2C. So I a lot of it is just trying to figure out what customers and users will want. B2B, and I think you, Paolo, you work in a B2B company, and Alex, I think you're like in the foundations team. So you're sort of B2B as well, because you're working for your teammates, right? You might know better how that works, but I guess you just ask people what they need, right? Or what they would want.
I guess so. Sometimes you just imagine that this might be useful because you would like to have this. And then you just build it and then people like it. Sometimes you are not that successful and people don't really like what you've built.
Yeah. One big part of all of this, obviously, as I said, is just figuring out which idea is the good one, which we can talk about. But it's also aligning all of the ideas with business requirements and values, because in the end, we're all right, trying to have a viable company or a viable product. So it not only needs to delight customers, but it needs to increase your metrics, whether that's traffic, revenue, ROI, or whatever it is. You need to have that in mind as well when you're thinking about new ideas. So, yeah.
And how do you decide which ones are the good ones? Because usually you get tons of feedback, right? Feedback from user, feedback from partners, feedback from stakeholders, and so on and so on. So I find super tricky to filter out that information and say, okay, this one is the good one, or the one that looks promising, and this other one probably is not a great idea to go ahead and try to implement it, because probably you don't know until you make it, right?
So a good way is just to make it, but just make it very small. So you just do a lot of research first. Again, figure out what's out there in the market, what competitors have, how viable it is. And it's also when you start to talk with your team, in my case with the developers and the designers, just to talk about how viable the general idea is. Is it crazy? Is it something we can do, or is it something we cannot do, or it's going to take a long time? And from there, that's when you start prioritizing. But first of all, you need to, again, have in mind that it needs to be good for users. So it needs to either attract new users or delight the users you already have. And obviously, it needs to meet your business goals. So you decide whether that could have a business value. Can this give me more users? Will this engage the users I already have even further? And you make an educated guess in that case. And then you start just trying to talk to your users a bit more. So there's a lot of ways to validate an idea before you even start building it. You either do user interviews or small user testing, and you start thinking, like looking at what the users, whether the user might be interested in this or not. You can never ask, would you be interested in this? Because they will all say, yeah, sure. So you have to be very smart in how you ask the question there. And then you also, again, start looking at metrics, at how feasible it is with the team you have. And if you feel like it could be a decent idea, then you prioritize it. Because as you all know, like we have a backlog full of ideas, all of us. So you just need to decide which one is the next one that you want to attempt. So you prioritize it. In my case, I always prioritize it based on effort versus reward. So how hard will it be to build? And then how much will it give me back that I can think of? So a lot of it is, again, involving the product team, involving the development team, a lot of chats with the likes of you too, just asking questions, trying not to ask the big question, which is how long will this take, but trying to ask questions like how much effort will this be? Can we make it faster? Is there any way we can improve how we build this? And then based on effort and reward, you decide what to build next. And then you need to actually validate the idea. There's a lot of ways of doing that. You can either do some prototype and just send it to some customers and see what they think of it. Or you can do some, again, I know a lot of you do like beta versions, so initial versions. And I love to do MVPs. I love to just create really quick minimum viable products and see whether that works or not. And I never work more on it if I feel it's not successful enough.
Now I have two questions. One is, how hard is to kill one of those MVPs? Because you launch an MVP and people are happy with it. And then you have the dev team coming back to you saying, okay, that was an MVP. Now we need to kind of start from scratch because that was a proof of concept. It's not ready to put in production somehow. What's your take in that?
In my mind and the way we work in my team, proof of concepts are different to MVPs. So a proof of concept might just be what I like to call research. And we love to allocate some specific time for that. So we say research is never more than this much effort.
So you time box it all the time, right?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that makes
especially
sense.
For POCs, because otherwise they just go crazy. The feature creep is a very big thing in a lot of products. So it's always something we need to be very careful of. So for me, the first thing, especially if it's something, a lot of the MVPs we do are things based on resources we already have. So we use tools we already have in my product just to build something on top of it, something slightly different, but backstage of it is usually very similar. Whereas if I need a proof of concept because it's going to be much more different, I just ask the dev team to try and figure out how much effort it will be, whether it's feasible or not. If it's not that much effort and the POC proves successful somewhat and we feel like it could be done, then I ask the designer to figure out a simple design that is still very good. It has to be, an MVP has to be good. That's the hard thing about it. It still has to be high quality because otherwise the users won't want it, but it has to be as low effort as you can. One thing I always love when we are trying to figure out what the MVP will be is just we start with something. Like, let's build this. We need this, 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 and this. There's 5 features. And then let's say, okay, what can we delete from this? So you always ask, what can you remove from this list? And that's where your MVP is. And it's usually hard for product teams because they're very protective of the product, both designers and developers. And I agree with that. But it's always, so you always have to push a bit and say, okay, let's remove things from this. Especially, I must say, with UX designers, sometimes it's like, oh, users won't understand this. Like, I think they will. Let's try it out. So you always have to repeat 1,000 times, like, it's only an MVP. We will improve it if it's successful. So again, a proof of concept is time boxed in my mind, is something that just lets you know whether this can be built. And then from there, both the UX team and the developers decide, and me, we decide what the MVP will look like and what it will be. Again, it needs to be high quality. You always need to add that little, what we call a delighter. It cannot be just the bare basic bones of the feature. It needs to have something a little bit extra that is not a lot of effort, but that will tell users like, yeah, I like this. And then that's your MVP. And then from there, we usually let it marinate. I say we let it like a month or two out there in the wild in production, and you wait and see if it's actually done what you hope it would do. We always have a set of metrics that we measure it against. So we have a goal for this MVP, like we want it to attract new customers or engage the customers we already have or monetize better, more revenue. So we monitor it to see whether it's actually doing what we want it to do.
Nice. You're answering my second question, which was about metrics, because you said, okay, I plan in based on effort and value.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that, you need some metrics in place to recognize that you're meeting the value or you're getting the value back that you're expecting. So you need some metrics. But you already answered my question. It's like, you have metrics to see how far you are from your target. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and an MVP, it's for new features. Sometimes we do other things. We might do an A/B test For example, if we just actually in my company, we just recently did a set of user interviews, of user tests. So we use a tool called Userlytics, which gives you a panel of people. You can give them screener questions, and then based on the type of user you want to use your site, in my case, it's a website, they just give you, I don't know, would you say 6 people on mobile, 5 on desktop, and you prepare a set of tasks, and they just go through your website doing that, and they're recorded, and they need to talk out loud to say what they think about what they're doing and how the tasks are performed. So there you usually find pain points, and they're not necessarily new features, but they're a nice challenge because they're places where you see users struggle to use your tool, and you know why they struggle because they usually tell you, but usually how you solve that problem is much harder, and a lot of it is UX issues. So for those cases, a lot of the times we use, instead of just releasing an MVP, because it's not really a new feature, it's changing something we already have, we sometimes just do an A/B test, for example. And we test 2 different versions with 50-50 or 3 different versions, sometimes even, and then figure out there which one was better. And for those, you also need to establish really specific metrics. I want the click-through rate to be higher on this menu because people are not understanding what this is and they never navigate my site using the menu because they don't get it. Or I hope people can use the search box more because it will help them with this. So we always need to manage those metrics. We use Google Analytics in my company, so we send events and just track them, see how these perform. But it could be events, it could be traffic, it could be revenue, it could be time on page that you measure, or the pages per session if you want people to navigate through your site more. So there's a lot of things you need to figure out before you start your MVP or your testing.
If we step back a little bit, to start even with proof of concept, you need to still get some kind of approval, right? That, okay, you could invest resources, time, and then development power into this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And what if the idea is innovative one? That no one did something like this before. So it means you cannot get a feedback or even guesses how well it will be accepted by people, by your users. But you have to be bold, like in one way, but you also have to believe in yourself, right? Because you cannot ask users, would you like, maybe not that direct, but what if you have this, right? What would be your reaction? Or I don't know, because they know, they never seen something like this. Have you ever been in such situation when there's an idea to propose something which is, it was never before implemented or, I don't know, proposed to someone? How to deal with this?
Yeah. And those are usually the golden ideas. So those are, if that works, that's what makes or like changes a product for the better. And those are, again, what I call the delighters. So things customers are never expecting, but if they get them, it's like, oh, I love this. And we always, I mean, probably not at that scale, but something I always try to do is to add something that no other competitor has or no one has ever thought about. But at a larger scale, in my company, we do have brainstorms, which we call, and in which we ask for blue sky thinking. So just dream and think about anything that you would want to do. And we also have what we call tech sprints, which in which everyone is encouraged to think a bit out of the box and try out new things and test out new things. So I love having ideas like that. I know other companies have hackathons and things like that. Sometimes the role of the PM is to convince, especially the higher ups, to invest in an idea that might not be as you were saying, Alex, as solidly proofed, but that you really believe could change. I was reading about also about the BBC, when the BBC in England, they had a new PM who was quite young, and they decided, they went very hard for online presence, just for having their iPlayer and all of that. And the BBC was very against it at first because it's a very traditional broadcasting company, TV, and they didn't think having an online player would help them. And right now, most people actually watch the BBC on the online player. It's just they had this idea. Again, sometimes you just have to be very creative and think about what's coming in the future. And with that, figure out what could it be and just try and push for it. I'm sure at first, a lot of the traditional BBC users didn't watch it online, but now it's obviously been a very successful idea. So yeah, I love that. Sometimes you just need to innovate, be creative, and a good understanding of the market and where it's going and all the new technologies that are coming up, I think is a great toolbox for a product manager or for a developer, though, that because developers are big parts of helping move the product forward, and they usually have awesome ideas. In my case, because I have no idea how to develop something, and then they come back with these great innovative solutions that you're like, okay, yeah, that could work even better than what I was thinking.
So does that mean that you try to get developers on board first?
I try to let them in as much as I can into why we're building what we're building first. Like I try never to say we're just doing this and go ahead. I explain why we're doing that, what's behind it. It's super important to get them inspired in my mind as well. As I don't know who said this, but you need missionary developers, not mercenary developers. So people that believe in your product and want it to improve. So it's always important to, in my mind, to let them know why you're doing this, what's how it's going to improve the product and the business and everything, and get them involved in the business goals and have responsibility over them. We also have brainstorms with the whole team very often, including obviously the developers. So their input is much appreciated. Some of them have been in the company for much longer than me, so they know the product very, very well. So yeah, but you need buying from them. I think all of you are not very happy if you're working in something you don't believe in or you don't know why you're doing it. It's super important in my mind for everyone to know why you're doing this and to try and do it as better as you can.
And what about business? How do you gain your trust? How do you convince them to go with a bold idea?
That's the hardest part, actually, because I think the product team is always happy to do something that's innovative and interesting. I am lucky in that I have stakeholders that trust me in our company. We're not even called product managers. We're called general managers because we have also oversight over the business, the P&L, the money that our product is making and is spending. So we have a bit more responsibility over it. And also, which means we also have a bit more independence. But in my case, they trust us quite a lot. But one thing that works really well and that I'm very used to, because I don't know if someone heard the previous episode where I was in, but I used to be a researcher at uni, a historian. So data is my jam. I thrive in having all the information and all the numbers. So one thing that always works with the higher ups is just having lots of numbers that validate what you want to do. If it's something that it's going to be harder, you just say, this is the future. This is coming here. Look at everyone who's talking about this. And obviously, if it's something that is not as innovative, it's easy to say, I believe this is going to make us grow this much or all of that. So numbers and data are king in this case.
I see. And what happened if let's take the worst case scenario, the proof of concept, the idea didn't work out and you have to shoot it down. How did you approach that scenario?
This happens a lot, actually.
Okay.
And in my case, because I work for an American company, you know, they're, you know how what Facebook used to say, which is not something, it's not that I love Facebook, but they used to say, like, you need to fail a lot. We embrace failure. And this is something my company believes in as well. And I think it makes our job easier because a lot of what we do fails, but it's okay as long as something that you do succeeds. The thing is, keep trying and keep getting new things out as much as you can, and some of it will eventually be successful. A lot of it is not necessarily a failure. It's just didn't do much. It hasn't crashed. You can just maintain it there, so you just keep it there. It has some users every once in a while, and that's it. There's other things that you just sunset, so you just decide to get rid of. This didn't work. There's also some things that maybe weren't as successful as some MVPs, but you feel like if you maybe added something else, because in a user interview, you heard someone say that, or you've tested it with users, using Userlytics or one of those tools, and they mentioned something that you feel could turn it around or change it, you risk it and go for phase two. So an MVP usually only stays an MVP if it's done really nothing much and you don't think there's value in continuing it. But otherwise, I sometimes even go for phase two, just if I feel that it could give it a boost. And sometimes they're very successful from the start as MVPs, and you just keep iterating and creating new features for it and just improving its UX, the design, and all of that. But yeah, a lot of them either don't do much or nothing at all. But that's okay.
Comparing to initial expectations, to these numbers that you mentioned, that you based even decision on going with whatever idea based on some numbers, some data that you have already now. And then it means if the idea fails in the end or succeed not in the way that you would expect, then it means it's comparing to what was expected, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually create documents beforehand that everyone can sort of check. Again, forecasts, especially because a lot of what I do is SEO, are very hard because you don't really know how Google's algorithm works. So you don't know if this change or this new feature is actually going to succeed there, or if it's because a lot of the user acquisition we do is through Google. But your forecasts should more or less draw you, like, take you to whether this has been successful or not, or again, or if it's been meh, like it's done something not as much as you wanted it to or you expected it to, and then you think about, oh, maybe if I change this, then I'll get more traffic. It depends again on what the goal for that new feature is, whether it's user retention, new users, better monetization. So yeah, it all depends on that.
You've mentioned that your company experiments a lot, so lots of things have been put in front of the user, so they try and then you get feedback and then you decide whether it goes on the next level or it just sunset. It sounds like the company should be built in a way in terms of processes and how company operates that it allows you this fast cycle of trying things and then getting feedback and then making fast decisions on whether you proceed further and then with the next step or just discard the idea. Could you mention maybe your favorite process or feature, like something that you like a lot? Okay, this is maybe not core part of this life cycle and all the processes, but what makes you excited about being part of this product discovery process, which makes it faster and then enjoyable? Maybe someone will learn, because I know that in some companies this process of, not even sure if it's discovery, but it's a long process from going from idea to even proof of concept. It could be a long time.
Yeah. And actually, in my team, the goal for this year is to build something new every month, at least get something out every month, and then try iterate over it. So we always have like two or three features we're doing phase two and phase three on, plus the earlier one. I love this process. It makes some people a bit anxious, just because it can create some tech debt, for example, because you're building things fast. So you need to be aware of that and allow time to solve some of that stuff. But I think it allows you to fail hard, but also to succeed really hard and to figure out exactly what your users want. In my case, it's not so much the building new features, it's just seeing in user testing and user interviews that the things we've changed and the new things we've created actually make users happy. I love that. We made a few changes to our UX recently. We had done some user testing a few months ago, and we redid them, actually the same ones. And it was just a 180-degree change in how they perceive the site. So that is what excites me more, just being able to see what an impact these things have. And also, I love being able to turn these things around really fast. That's just so much fun in my mind. And it's also super creative, because we're all the time breaking our heads trying to figure out how to make things better or how to make these new features work.
Sometimes even internal processes, how people communicate within the company, could create this artificial like borders that they take time. In some companies, you just could come to someone to the desk and then discuss things. And then in some companies, you create, I don't know, tickets and then wait for comments and so on and so on, which could take weeks to discuss one simple question.
One thing our founder always encouraged, which I really like, is just whenever you have a question, just ask it straight away. And then if you don't get an answer, that's okay, but hopefully you will. So we have very open communication. We work remotely, which also presents a challenge in this case, because mm-hmm. as we were saying, you cannot really go to someone's desk and ask. But we use all these communication tools, Slack, or we add comments. We use Jira for our workflow, so we add comments to our Jira tickets. But we keep in touch a lot. I talk to the developers every day and to the designer every day. So it's just, I think, keeping communication open as much as possible, and I agree, and not being afraid of just going and asking for something or asking the question. There's also open communication, in my case, from bottom up. So it's easy for me to ask someone of some of the higher ups for things straight, just shoot them a Slack message and hope they answer as soon as possible. So I agree with you. Communication is key in this case, because otherwise it takes forever. And just being able to make decisions and stick with them and trust that they're right. And sometimes they're not, but just say, okay, this is what we've decided and we're going to go with it. And just trust that you're doing the right thing and not overthink it too much. The good thing is with having data, which is, again, everything we do is based on data, whether it's user feedback, it's metrics that we have. So having data makes you trust everything you decide a lot more.
Also, I think this pace you mentioned, this quick pace of iterating over features, depends a lot on the stage of the company, right? If you're kind of a startup or in a starting with the company beginning phase, it's easier to iterate quickly because you're still trying things out or maybe trying to find market fit. But then you have like companies that are in a construction phase, right? Where everything is working and they have like a core part of the product that is making money and keep things running. So probably you don't want to innovate a lot around that area.
Yeah, I agree. It depends a lot. You can always build things around it. As I was talking about this BBC example, for example, which is illustrative in my mind. Obviously, it also depends on what the business goal is, whether you want to grow or not, or whether you want to have new users or just stick with what you have and improve it. But there's always things that you can improve. I've learned that. Your customers will let you know. I mean, in my mind, they're very vocal in my product. And we use Hotjar as well for getting feedback. And we have tons of Hotjar messages every day. So, and there's always things you can do better. So, keeping this communication process is not only needs to be open within the product team and with the product team and all the other teams and the leadership, but also with your customers and users. The more you can learn about them and talk to them, the better you will serve them, which is in the end what's going to make your product great, is that you're actually solving your users' problems.
I don't have much experience with the user feedback, but the times I saw user feedback is mainly users complaining. So they don't tend to tell you the good things of your product. They just tend to complain, like, this thing is not working. I don't like this color. The font is terrible. Things like that. So you don't get feedback like, okay, this, I don't know, shopping cart is great because it allows me to be there ready to buy in 3 steps, something like that. Maybe it's just the type of product I work for or the type of users I had in the past. But in my experience, you don't get that type of feedback. It's mainly complaints. I don't know how. What do you think about this?
There's one thing I always say when we change something and we don't A/B test it or do anything and it's just, well, we feel like this is going to go well. Let's just change it. And I always say, we will know if they don't like it because they will tell us.
So, oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's true that they complain, but Hotjar, we use this tool. It's just a tiny thing with feedback, and you use an emoji to say whether you like it or not, and you can add some feedback to it. we do get mostly positive feedback, and we don't force people to use it. It's true that when it is a complaint, there's a big message with it and saying exactly why they're complaining. The positive feedback is just a click on the emoji, and that's it. It's the same with our contact us button, like everything that they actually need to proactively use to give you feedback could be more used for complaints. However, for example, user testing with user analytics or user interviews, which is something we do a lot, just a couple of times a year, we send an email with a survey and try and see if we can find a good fit based on our user persona. So what most of our audience is, get six people and just Zoom chat or whatever, a video conference, ask them questions. Those tend to be quite positive as well, which you also need to take with a pinch of salt, because they're talking to you. They're gonna be hesitant to complain too much unless it's something big that they don't like. Those types of things are great as well to finding new ideas. Again, as I was saying, you cannot actually ask them, what would you want to see, or would you want to see this? They will always say yes. But you can get a lot of good feedback and positive feedback using things like that.
And you cannot make everyone happy, especially if you have a big user base. There will be at least a couple people who don't like what you've... Like, if you really, really work hard to deliver the best thing, still there will be a couple people saying, no, I hate this. And they will exactly. They will definitely tell you this.
They will tell you. It's so funny. I always say, like, we will know, like, next day if they don't like it. But if it's... We have millions of users, and if it's only 10 messages that are negative, I tend to think, like, oh, this is successful. Only 10 people have complained. It's fine.
From time to time, when some application that I like a lot and use a lot ask me to provide feedback, I put myself on their side and think, okay, I would like to receive something, and I really like this app, so I take my time and write something really nice saying, like, you're awesome, keep doing awesome stuff, I love your app.
Nice.
Because I would love to receive something like this as well.
Yeah, I share it with the team as well when we get something nice and they love it. I also share the funny ones because we get some interesting ones. But it's always awesome to see that people have actually taken the time to tell you how much they love it. And I also really appreciate people taking the time to say something is not working for them, because users are why the product is there. So you definitely want to make sure they're happy with what you've provided them, and always double guessing everything you do as well, and your product, even trying testing it out as much as you can within your team. Something we do as well when we create new features or MVPs is I just share it with the whole company, everyone, and say, go ahead and try this out and let me know what you think, because there's also a lot of people, all the employees, that can give you feedback. So there's always a lot of places where you can try and see whether what you've built makes sense or not. The hardest part is whether it's viable from business goal point of view. That's where you just need to get it out and see what it does after you've done the best you can to create a feature that you think works well.
But if you have an idea that you think is good, you can always trim it down to the bare minimum, right? And still try
exactly.
It out.
Yeah, that's the MVP. And then even when we release the MVP, I'm already thinking about what else we could add to it to make phase two and phase three. Even when you research it first, you always have ideas of how you can improve it. Sometimes the way you can improve it is something you had never thought about, and then once it's out, you realize it, or someone tells you, and you're like, oh, yeah, of course, why didn't I think of that? So, but yeah, always testing it out and getting it out is the best course of action. We sometimes also do prototypes that don't really work. For example, if we're trying to figure out what UX would be the best, we just try 2-3 different wireframes and ask users as well. So users are a lot of the times a great source of information.
As we mentioned complaints, I remembered personal experience. There's an app that I use, I like it. There's a feature or there's a change on existing feature that I like, and now it works slightly different and I have some complaints. And I feel that the feature was changed because the one who was making this product was treating me as something which has no brain or cannot think. It's like it feels that someone was thinking on behalf of me and was believing that, yeah, this is exactly what I need. And that's the opposite. Sometimes as a user, I just prefer that the one who built the product trust that I could still understand, I could think, I could recognize things, that I could, even if it's complex things, that I still could understand them. It's okay. And also as a developer who sometimes takes part in these discussions of what could be done and how and what, I also have a feeling that these discussions, sometimes they're biased, or I don't know, people believe that they could think or they know what the user actually wants. And sometimes they say that, yeah, this is based on whatever research or the questions that we ask to our users. But sometimes I feel that, no, how would you know? You're not this person. You cannot say that, right? Yeah. You could just still guess.
Yeah, making assumptions is very, very dangerous in a lot of... That's why you always want to be validating every step of the way with actual users.
Yeah, and maybe making small steps, like the small iterations, and then looking right away what are the effect of these changes.
Yeah.
If I would make a wish, I would like that whoever built the product just treat me as a human being with the brain who is able to still think and process data.
And that is also why you need to know your customers really well, because in your case, you're obviously a developer and you're young and you will know how to use this. But for example, if it's a product that older people use, you need to know that the font maybe needs to be a bit bigger because they won't be able to see it, or maybe a bit easier. So it's why you really need to know your users and your customers. But this opens a very interesting point. How, as developers, you too, how do you feel when someone like me, like a product manager, goes and asks you this type of thing? So we want to build this. How much effort would it be? What do you think about it? Like, how do you feel? What do you want to be asked? And yeah, how do you want these conversations to go and things like that? It's very interesting for me.
You already had the answer in your previous phrase when you mentioned we need to use a type font that is bigger because our users are elderly people. That totally makes sense to me. So if you give me the reason why we are making this change, yeah, that's it. I don't like when I get something to do that I have no idea why. If you come to me and explain the reason why we have to do that, or even ask for feedback, and maybe sometimes you get with like, okay, users have issues to read our texts. So one approach is to increase the font, but we could use something different. Like, I don't know, maybe we have also blind users, so we have to get our HTML ready for the screen readers. I really like when people approach me with the problem and they are open to listen to other possible solutions. And it's also nice that they bring their own solution. The main thing is I need the reason why we are doing this.
Yeah, because then it opens the chance to contribute, not just implement you want, but also contribute. For you, it's a chance to get some, not just opinion, but also maybe idea how this could be achieved better. I don't know, easier, faster, whatever. It depends on the case. But if developer is just told you have to do this, that's it, this is the result that we want, but without explanation why exactly this happens from time to time, then developer has no chance to provide this feedback to maybe suggest better implementation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Sometimes you can get a better technical solution by giving the developers a bit more context, or not. But like if you go there and tell a developer, please increase 2 pixels this font. Like, yeah, probably he will do it, but you will miss the whole conversation and feedback. And
how early in the process do you usually want to be involved?
That's a good question. I would say as soon as possible. I like when the idea is already solid, or is like it has a high chance of going through. So if I'm going to be talking about this feature for 30 minutes, 1 hour, and squeezing my brain, I would like to be something that is going to go ahead or has some chances, right?
That's the engineering way of thinking. Yeah, I have the same issue. The brainstorm sessions when someone says, you know, you could propose anything, the sky is the limit. And then just imagine that you have all possible resources. That this phrase, just imagine you have all possible resources. There is no time limit. Tell me your ideas. That's like full stop for me. Like, I cannot give you any idea at all.
I need some constraints.
That's why my personal preference would be to involve me in the process when it's not just this rough ideas exchange, but it's something more or less, maybe not super solid, but more or less something which discussable, kind of, that it's not just really rough ideas.
At least a goal, right? This is the thing we want to achieve. So you already have like a goal in mind. We need to improve this page because we want to increase the number of visitors in, I don't know, 10%, 5%, whatever. And we think that, I don't know, search box is not right, or we have issues with the users that are not capable of reading these phrases here. And so you have a goal and a rough plan. To me, that's a good moment to try to provide my expertise and feedback.
And what I love about working with developers as well is that from that initial seed of an idea, there's usually, like you always think about, oh, with this same tech, we could do this and this as well based on this, which is something I always really like because it's maybe something I had never thought of. So based on what we want to build with this idea, we could probably increase it with this or create this spin-off of this because technically it's possible. So that's awesome as well.
I really love when I manage to reduce the scope of the feature. We really want to do this and this and this. And, you know, with the tech that we have in place, we can do this that probably we'll do. And then we don't have to go all the way with this shiny new feature.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, just make it more efficient. But I can also see how some product teams tend to feature creep again. Is a thing. And you're talking about this and then everyone gets so excited and then we can do this and this. And you're like, no, we're trying to delete stuff, not add more stuff, and we can do that later. But that's a good sign, though. I always love that because I think that lets me know that people are excited about the idea. To summarize, there's some very important things that you need to do. Data, you need to be willing to fail, to be flexible, to not have your ideas set in stone, and communication is key with your team. They need to have as much information as they need to make good decisions, and then just test as much as you can and validate your ideas when you test, because otherwise you'll be going in blind.
Thanks a lot for joining us today, Anna. It was a great episode. It's always great to have you around.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Okay, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. In case of any questions, simply send us an email at codeandbeyond@protonmail.com. You will also find the address in the show notes. If you are listening to our show on Spotify, don't forget to leave us a rating. Keep being amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.